You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan with you for the next hour or so. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. And as always, probably the best way to get me is reception102@gmail.com. And I'll get back to you with any tech-related questions you might have, any things you want me to look up and research or give my opinion on what I think is the right way to go for what you need, when it comes to TVs, computers, how to set things up, how to do different things. I don't know everything, but I can research and look it up, and I have a good interest in it. So, and actually, you start off with Michael in Limerick is actually asking about phones, and he's into his photography. He said, what's the best phone for photography? But I suppose it's... The question really is, what's the best photography phone for you, kind of thing? It's actually, I suppose, first is what are you used to? Do you know, if you're used to using a certain brand, you might want to stick with that. Do you know, if you're using Apple or Android, even specific brands within Android and things like that as well, do you know? But I suppose it depends on the type of photos you want to take. You know, some phones take fantastic photos, but they take good landscape photos, you know, and things like that. And some have better selfie cameras, and it's even the type of photograph as well. You know, you can see some of the newer, like the Realme, I think it's X3 Super Zoom, or the GT Super Zoom, X3 Super Zoom, I think, has the... like 128mm zoom lens. So if it's something that you say you wanted to go out and zoom in, you know, you needed a zoom lens to capture, say, wildlife or things like that, that might be better. But if you're doing portraits, you might need a big zoom lens. You might be prefer to have a better main lens and things like that. So there's periscope cameras, there's different things like that. But then you might want just... pure, like, say, so a lot of the phones nowadays are more about the software than the lenses, you know, things like that. Like the Google Pixels kind of a few years ago revolutionized the software. And I just have an article here actually looking at the what they think is TechRadar, what they think is the 10 best phones for cameras. And the Galaxy S21 Ultra, which is the newest Galaxy. And yeah, I've heard that they've really improved on the software, plus their lenses are quite good, so that they're up there with some of the best photos. It depends on the type of photos. Some of them have very... Samsung are known for saturated photos, very bright colors and things like that, but some people prefer a more neutral kind of tone, and it depends on what kind of photos you're into. Let's see what else this list says. The Huawei Mate 40 Pro. Yeah, there are another ones that came out with kind of... Yeah, there's a few different companies have kind of contributed towards bringing on the camera technology, whether it comes to lenses or multiple lenses or the quality, like one lens but with very good software. So there's lots of different things that have been added, and I suppose they've all helped each other in a way. You know, they all kind of steal from each other or all use each other's ideas. Yeah, it all depends on what you're looking for. What else have we got here? The iPhone 12 Pro Max. So the iPhone was the original, you know, best. Like there was one time that if you wanted to take decent photos with a phone, iPhone was the only way to go. But nowadays they've actually been passed out in some ways, and they catch up again and then they get passed out again, so it goes back and forth. So it's a lot of personal preference and what type of photos you want to take. But any of the lists I've mentioned there anyway so far have been very good. You know, there's a lot of periscope zoom cameras. I'm kind of a fan of zoom as well. I like to have a... like when you go places and you can't get to something, I was on a bridge one time and there was something really nice underneath the bridge, like a graffiti, And luckily I had my big camera with me and I was able to get a nice photo of it, and there was a boat beside it, and I actually have it framed to put up my house. But without having a zoom lens on the camera that time, I wouldn't have been able to get that photo, you know. I would have had a big wide angle photo, and the area itself wasn't brilliant, but the framing I wanted to do to make the photo was there, you know, so I like that. But there's no point having a zoom either, where it's digital zoom, where you're just cropping and cropping and cropping the photo. You might as well have no zoom. You just crop it later on because you're losing all the quality. So you want an actual optical zoom. So that's why in phones, the kind of, if you really want a good optical zoom, those periscope zoom seems to be the way to go. They kind of have a moving lens inside in a periscope, like you'd have in a submarine kind of design. Number four, the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra. Yeah, that'd be similar to the Galaxy S. Number five, OnePlus 9 Pro. Yeah, OnePlus are always there or thereabouts as well. So it's pretty much the top 10 of cameras is pretty much close enough to the top 10 of actual phones on a lot of these lists and things as well. So, but there's other specialists outside of that, like the one I was talking about, the Realme X3 with the Super Zoom, and they're catching up as well, and like they're a kind of a cousin, shall we say, of the OnePlus. So they'd have a lot of their software things as well. So yeah, that's some of the to look out for, and whatever suits your needs kind of thing, and personal preference. And yeah, so best of luck looking for your phone. I think you actually mentioned that you were getting an upgrade, so it'd be more than likely whatever store you got it from that you're getting your upgrade from would be. So yeah, any of those, the top, yeah, say the Samsung Ultras, the Huawei Mate, any of those top iPhone, if you're using an iPhone, whichever one of those, the top ones, at all be pretty good camera-wise nowadays. They've all, after the Pixel kind of set the standard for the new technology when it comes to software and stuff, they all kind of followed suit. But there's some better than others. And if you want to see actual, there's some articles and things like that, if you want to see photo differences. There's actually a YouTuber I'd recommend, Mr. Who's the Boss, and what he does is he'd have like a selfie stick but with like 12 phones on it, and he'd walk around the place and do videos and do photos with all of them at the same time, and then you can look through the, you know, he goes through the photos to compare them all. So that's a good he's a good one as well to look if you want a video kind of reference. So anyway, let's have a look at some of the latest news and technology. As usual, I open some of the latest stories and see what's up, and kind of do a live reaction myself and give a bit of opinion or something on what they say about some of the newest innovations and things like that, and changes and updates and things on technology. And we get to see the news together, so that's quite good. New York Auto Show cancelled due to COVID-19 again. Also, show organisers pulled the plug due to the increased spread of COVID-19, the Delta variant. 2021 New York Auto Show is cancelled. I wonder, are they going to do an online one or something like that? Is expected to kick off. A number of big debuts have been confirmed. Nissan was planning to do their new Z sports car. Of course, they've had some very famous Z cars in the past, and they were going to do another one. Subaru were going to have a 2022 WRX saloon, but they expect them to still debut on schedule, though everything will be up in the air or online or something. Actually, there was an article here about the new Subaru. Just below that article, there's a Subaru WRX on the horizon. Of course, that was the famous rally car, you know, Colin McRae and all those back in the day, Richard Burns. And did they stop making them a few years ago? The STI, the kind of sports versions and things like that. But they were bringing out a new WRX here. And it's here before, you know, maybe they're going hybrid or electric or something. I wouldn't be surprised. Although they're famous for the boxer engines. So maybe they're boxer hybrid or something like that. The New York Auto Show Festivals here, remember, auto shows, yeah, it's a joke. Company also released a new teaser. Well, this is beforehand, but I just see what the car was about, if they say anything. Regarding the new WRX engine, but earlier reports suggested that the saloon could go get a version of the 2-litre, 2.4-litre turbo flat 4 used in the Ascent, Legacy and Outback. In those cars, 2.4 engine produces 260 horsepower, 277 foot-pounds of torque. The current WRX is 2-litre flat 4, meanwhile it takes. I thought the WRX had changed to a bigger engine, had changed to 2.4 over here. This is an American article. But they were 2-litre all along, 2-litre turbo, but I thought they went up to a bigger one. And the Evo stayed at 2-litre near the end of its life on the with the STI and all that, so maybe they're just doing it over there. But I don't know if they're going to bring out a new one here or not. But they were a real classic when it comes to rally fans and sports car fans and things like that. On RTE News, Luna and JumpWatts partner to explore smart city micro-mobility solutions. Irish smart scooter technology company Luna has announced a partnership with US-based company JumpWatts with the aim of combining teleoperation and computer vision technology to improve the safety and operational efficiency of shared electric scooter fleets. The company are planning to work together on a pilot project in the Smart DCU campus in Dublin. The partnership aims to provide a solution to the escalating global problem of e-scooters being in the wrong location relative to user demand and cluttering footpaths, leading to inconvenience and hazards, particularly for wheelchair users and visually impaired. That's all about, isn't it, just going out and seeing where people need them and things like that, and doing research and JumpWatts, Los Angeles based micromobility teleoperations startup, has created a virtual valet, a suite of technologies that allows any e-scooter to right itself if tipped over, remotely reposition itself to a designated parking zone, and be summoned by riders to a specific location. Well, that's very handy. They'll drive and they'll come and meet you. Oh, that's pretty cool. Luna provides world-first computer vision solutions to shared micro-mobility operations to tackle the issues. So the scooters could be driving themselves around the place and taking themselves back. Say if you leave one somewhere, it'll bring it back to its dock or wherever it needs to be for other people to pick it up and or for it to be charged and all that. So that's pretty amazing. Very futuristic. Nintendo profits decline year on year as the Switch hits 89 million sold. It's not exactly a normal quarter this time as it was this time in 2020. Nintendo has released its earnings for April, June quarter, and while the figures would normally be strong for what's usually a slow period, revenue and profit are both down compared to a year ago. That's perhaps not surprising, given the company was riding a surge in demand for video games during the first wave of COVID-19. All right, so they're just back to a normal level again, in other words. And they had the Animal Crossing was a big hit that was just after hitting as well. So they had an unusual kind of high then, so they're kind of back down to normal again. So it's kind of it's not too bad for them. Let's see, 2021 Chevy Corvette Stingray review, there's nothing quite like it, it says here in CNET. The new Corvette is actually very cool. I don't think you can buy it over here. I don't think they sell it, but it's the first mid-engined. They always had Corvettes over the years. They were famous for having like fiberglass bodies and like 350, 5.7-litre engines. Kind of underpowered in the old. I'm a fan of the late 1970s ones. Are very nice, but they were only like 190 and 220 horsepower for 5.7 liter. It wasn't a lot sports car, but I think they were going through the oil crisis that time, and they kind of detuned the engines a lot. But I like the shape of them, the C3 Corvettes. There's a new one, and the new one is the first one where they move the engine to the back, and Ferrari style or supercar style. And then actually the design is very nice that way as well. It's like having a kind of an American version of a Lamborghini or Ferrari or one of those, for I'm sure a lot less, but unfortunately you can't buy them over here. But it's getting good reviews anyway in America. It looks the part anyway, very, very nice. I'm sure maybe the fit and finish might be as good, but do you know what? It'll probably be as reliable. I don't think the Italian supercars are known for their reliability either, so it'll probably be maybe even more reliable, more of a tank kind of a thing like the, a lot of the American cars. But so it's kind of a, they're finally kind of a, the muscle cars are maturing, you know. They're putting more fancy suspension and moving the engines to the back with weight distribution and things like that. So it looks very nice now. It really has that supercar look, in fairness. Speaking of earlier, we were talking about camera phones and stuff like that, and I was saying one of the phones that kind of revolutionized photography was the Google Pixel. And there's a Pixel 6 coming out, so they've released some kind of images of it and stuff, and they always try to go for a kind of a unique design. So they have like a slate look with like a black strip going 3/4 ways or more across the top, and then with a different color on top, a little strip on it. And the black strip, say that's just below the top, is the one that contains the cameras and all the sensors and things like that on the back. So it says here on CNET that Google's Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro had their first official reveal on Monday, promising exciting features stemming out of a brand new camera system. Alright, so they're changing things up. Google's in-house developer Tensor system. So this is this new chip. I think there's an article about this somewhere as well along the list of stuff that I'm looking at today. This is their new chip that they think is, what I was reading about it is, I'll probably say it here as well, but I was reading about it the other day as well. It was saying that, do you know, like if you ask your phone something and it answers you back, or if you ask it to say type, if you're, you know, I'm a bit lazy when it comes to typing sometimes and I just do the speech to text, and as you're typing, it sends off the information to the internet, and it comes back straight away. That's why it won't work a lot of the time, or it'll work. It won't work as well. I think it does work. I've done it sometimes without internet, and it kind of mishears me sometimes. But a lot of the time, it's sending out the information coming back in from their servers. So what this does, it's like having your own little server in your phone. So it does a lot of stuff in the phone. So if you do the speech to text, it'll do it internally, so it'll be much faster reaction. And it's same thing with camera, with the cameras and things like that. It does I don't know how much the cameras would be using the internet for actually taking photos, but maybe for processing them, maybe for stitching all, you know, like some photos are like 6 photos stitched together and things like that. So maybe it was using their own servers for doing that or something. But this new Tensor system on a chip, SoC, will be doing a lot of that stuff internally. Sometime this autumn it's supposed to be coming out. Here's my main reason why I'm keen. A new camera system. As a professional photographer, of course, I'm excited about new camera innovations on phones that lets you take amazing images without having to haul back-breaking amounts of gear. Google's Pixel phones have always had solid cameras with great low light and HDR performance. But last couple of models... Oh, that's another thing actually to watch out for in cameras is low light performance. So the lower F number is the better. If you get a lens with like an F1.4 or something, it'd be a lot better than a F2.1 or something. It lets more light in. But the last couple of models haven't really pushed the boat out. The Pixel 5's camera setup did take good images, but against the triple array on Apple's iPhone 12 Max and Samsung's Galaxy, it didn't really do a lot to tempt people to pursuit of the best phone possible. So it kind of, yeah, because I knew they set the standard there for a few years, but yeah, the Samsung Galaxy and the iPhone seem to pass them out again. They seem to take turns, all these different brands, but The Pixel 6 promises to be an improvement with an upgraded image sensor that promises to capture 150% more light than its predecessor. And more light means better looking photos, particularly in low light situations. There's also a 4x optical zoom, so that's good. So it kind of gets the quality, and it has the proper optical zoom, which I'll particularly focus on this person and seeing it says. On as zoom lenses can offer a great way of finding new creative compositions for your photography. That's what I was talking about earlier, yeah. And you might have missed with just a wide-angle lens. Only the Pro is going to get the telephoto lens, though, with the standard Pixel 6 getting the standard zoom and ultra-wide. Oh, so that's a pity. Yeah, because the telephoto is very handy to have. I'm a fan of telephoto. Megapixels numbers on this cameras are still unknown, but rumored specs, 50 megapixel wide camera, 12 megapixel ultra wide on both, and the Pro's telephoto's zoom is supposed to come with a 48 megapixel sensor. The Tensor processor, which will go into more shortly, also plans to give these cameras a boost, which we'll go into more. Oh yeah, so they're talking about that processor. Photography demos given several tech outlets demonstrating the Tensor's capabilities displayed how the chip can intermix elements of the photos taken by the Pixel 6 multiple cameras, putting all those details together into a single photo. Well, they've been doing that for a while, but maybe it just does a better job of it. In all, the Pixel 6 is likely to have, but say if you take a zoom photo or something, it'll take some stuff out of a normal photo and add it into it or something, or I don't know. Yeah, but they'll be complementing each other anyway to give you the best image possible, so that's good. The Tensor processor, so let's see what they say about it. Previous Google phones use Qualcomm's Snapdragon chips in its phones, but it's going in a bold new direction for the Pixel 6 by launching its own silicon named Tensor. It's running the whole phone. It's not just running the cameras or something. It's actually the whole chip running the phone, so that's brave to do the whole new thing. So Google hasn't been specific about what kind of performance upgrades we can expect, but it has said that the upgrades to AI and speech recognition will be particularly noticeable, along with aforementioned photography improvements. Yeah, I was reading that the other day. It might seem odd move for Google to start making its own chips, but it's a move that's exciting for the future of its phones. The Tensor chip isn't just about raw processing power. Most phones have way more power than they need, but by controlling both the hardware and software, Google will be able to develop applications to take full advantage of the onboard components. Right, okay, so that's pretty cool. Android 12 as well. Pixel 6 will be among the first phones to launch with Android 12. So that's going to have that as well. Yeah, so that's Google rumors, new details, confirm in-house chip, colorful design. Oh, yeah, so this is just, when I scroll down, it just brings me to another article. So if you're over on the iPhone side of things, iOS 15 may give the iPhone's camera an upgrade. So they're doing the same kind of thing. Fewer green flares. You can see them in viewfinder, but they disappear when you look at the processed picture. Okay, so that's kind of a flaw with the iPhone taking photos, that you see a kind of a green, what did it say? You see green in the viewfinder, but when you take the photo, green flare, but when you take the photo, it's not there. So it's just as you're composing the photo. So, but this is, they're hoping to get rid of that. Many iPhone users will be familiar with the green blobs, and while taking a picture, it seems like nothing has changed. The flare still shows up in the viewfinder, but when you take the final picture, the flare is nowhere to be seen. It does seem to be the result of post-processing that's done the picture, as the flare shows up in the alternate frames that are available if you're using Apple's live photo feature. So far, it's a bit unclear which iPhone models the processing happens on. In the Reddit thread, someone on Reddit was talking about it. Also seeing the green dot removal on their iPhone XS. Whilst another says it doesn't work on their iPhone 8 Plus. That feature could be limited to phones with an A12 Bionic processor or newer. The feature only being available on newer phones wouldn't necessarily be surprising. Some iOS 15 features like live text or portrait mode for FaceTime already have the A12 Bionic listed as a requirement. Of course, this is with this discovery came people trying to chase it down and find its limitations. So posted examples of the flare still showing up. Oh yeah, so some people were. Oh yeah, so it's like a green dot, just like those sun flares that you see in photos and things like that. So there people were trying to use it and make artistic photos out of it. So, but they're trying to. They'll be upgraded, as always, with beta features. The functionality we're seeing here could be different with a next release or gone altogether. Oh, so is it put in on purpose or what? I don't know. Still, it seems that Apple is at least experimenting with getting rid of the green blobs that can crop up in images from time to time. And it would be a welcome thing to see the final version of iOS 15. Yeah, so they're trying to get rid of that flaw in the camera system, but at least it doesn't show up in the final image anyway, but just as you're composing. Facebook can project your eyes onto a VR headset, and it's exactly as uncanny as it sounds. So there's a weird picture of a guy with these mad looking glasses with like looks like two sticks of RAM on stuck on either side of them, and a load of cables plugged, like a HDMI cable plugged in both sides, and wires all over it. So it's a mad looking yoke. If Facebook Reality Labs wants to help people see with your eyes while you're in virtual reality, even if the result sits somewhere between mildly unsettling and nightmarish. So what it is so it'll track your eye movement. So if you look down, it'll look down. So it'll show exactly what you're seeing when you're looking in VR. Which I suppose would look better than the, say, like the PlayStation VR headset is where you move your head, it shows that direction, but it doesn't know exactly what part of the screen you're looking at, because when you have a headset on, it's like looking at a cinema screen. So if you look down at the bottom, it won't know that. It'll just know which direction your head is pointing in. It won't know what direction your eyes are moving in. So this goes a step further what Facebook are doing with their VR headset. A recipe for making VR headsets less physically isolating. Researchers have devised a method of translating your face and onto the forehead of a headset, although they emphasize it's still firmly experimental. Pass-through VR refers to a feature that displays a live video feed from a headset's cameras, letting users see the real world while they're still wearing the device. Facebook's Oculus Quest platform, and they're also working on pass-through VR, which refers to a feature that displays a live video feed from a headset's cameras, letting users see a real world while they're still wearing the device. Facebook's Oculus Quest platform, for instance, shows users a pass-through feed when they step outside of their VR's space boundaries. All right, so it just shows you, it has a camera on the outside and just shows you, oh, you're stepping out of where you should be standing or something like that, so you can see what's going on outside. It's useful for quickly dropping out of VR. It can also enable a form of augmented reality by adding virtual objects to the camera feed. But as FLR notes, the people around the headset users can't make eye contact even if they're wearing them. This is awkward if bystanders are used to seeing their friend co-workers' uncovered face. What? Also, it's like it has the little screens where it shows you, the person's eyes on the outside as well. That's just weird. I don't know. That's weird. Do you need that? Is it really necessary to have two little screens showing a video of your eyes on the outside of the headset, so it looks like you're just wearing glasses or something? I don't know. FRL scientist Nathan Matsuda decided to change this. A blog post explains that Matsuda started in 2019 when he mounted a 3D display onto an Oculus Rift S headset. The screen displayed a virtual rendering of his upper face, and custom-rigged eye-tracking cameras captured where Masuda was looking. Yeah, so that's what I was talking about earlier. So his avatar's eyes could point in the same direction. So this just looked, there's a picture here, it looks like a virtual reality headset with like a phone glued onto the outside of it, so you can see the person's eyes inside. Very strange. Very strange. I think probably unnecessary as well. So this is the Tensor chip. Yeah, we talked a bit about that already. Shaping up to be the company's most ambitious smartphone in years, the Pixel 6. Yeah, so compared to juggernauts like Samsung or Apple, or even smaller players like Oppo and Xiaomi. Yeah, so that's just more AI boosting, promises to improve photos and videos. So we talked about that, text to speech and all that. So yeah, it'll be doing it more internal. So that's pretty cool. Sony's next PSVR, speaking of VR, Sony are working on a second one, was reportedly detailed as at a developer summit. Further confirmations of the device's FOV screens and controllers. Oh yeah, so let's see. I have the first VR. It's quite good, but you can see there's definitely a lot of room for improvement when it comes to quality and things like that. Maybe upgrade to 4K screens or as far as they can go quality-wise, because everything is, you know, if you have a 720p screen, from a distance, it looks all right. It doesn't look too bad. But the closer you get, you can see the pixels because it's less pixels. So the more pixels you have, the smaller they get and the harder you have to look in to see them. That when you take a VR headset, it's right near your eyes. So you can see all the pixels and things like that if it's not sharp enough. You can see that the PlayStation VR is good, but it has some room for improvement. So hopefully the next one will be much, much sharper. And there's like if anyone has ever worn one of them, it looks like you're looking through like a lace curtain or something. There's like a mesh in front of it. That's just the design of it. But you get used to it and you just look through it. You don't realize it, but it's there all the time. So hopefully they'll be getting rid of that. According to YouTube channel PSVR Without Parole, that's weird, yeah? With further corroboration from Upload VR, Sony held a developer summit on Tuesday where it detailed new information about the controllers and game development strategy for the sequel to PSVR and seemed to confirm some features have already been reported. Among the details, next generation PSVR controllers, NGVR controllers based on what the PSVR Without Parole claims, is the code name for the device, can reportedly not only detect when you're holding the controller and touching buttons, but also how far away your fingers are. The feature sounds like a bit like the radar detection that Google built into its phones, smart home devices in the past with the Soli chip. Sony also reportedly told developers is looking to pursue a hybrid model for future AAA releases on PlayStation. The goal being having optional VR support for all major releases. Oh, wow, that'd be amazing. Similar to what Resident Evil 7 and No Man's Sky received on the PS4 and PS5. As far as we know, a console is still required to use the PSVR. A console is still required to use the PSVR. Oh, right. Oh, it might be able to stand alone. But if the plan is true, you could choose to play major AAA titles in VR on your TV going forward. So directly without using the PS5 or something, or PS4. I presume it would be PS5 only, more than likely. Sony published an announcement. Unless it's a standalone one. Sony publicly announced the next generation PSVR in February and detailed the features of its new controllers not long after. So the next generation PSVR connects the PlayStation consoles through a single cable. No pass-through box. That's good, because that was a bloody disaster. There was at least four cables involved. It was like a cable coming from the console into the box, and then another cable coming out of the console into the headset, and another one coming out of the box in back into the console. And then you did it the wrong way around, so to swap it, it has to be plugged in the back, not the front of the console, because there's like a USB on both sides. I was half an hour at it. I had to get a converter in as well with the PS5. Because the plug wasn't available that was on the PS4, so I had to get a little that was free, but I had to wait for that to come to wire up the headset and all just to use it. So plugging directly into the console is very good, so that's a good idea. Now, wireless would probably be the best of all, where you plug it in and charge it like a controller, but I suppose it'd be heavier than things like that, so I suppose the cable, at least the single cable, is a much better improvement. The headset features higher resolution OLED displays that offer 2000 by 2040 pixels per eye for a total 4K resolution. That's good. An improved 110 degree field of view, 10 degrees wider than the PSVR. So that's good. Sony reportedly plans to use flexible scaling resolution in conjunction with FOVEATED, foveated rendering, enabling eye tracking to allow the device only render what you're actually looking at. Okay, so that's very interesting. So it makes it sharper whatever direction you're looking at. It knows where your eye is pointing at. The overall goal being to reduce the strain on the PSVR and PS5 and improve performance. Sony will reportedly use inside-out tracking for the next generation PSVR. And the company says the device controllers will have adaptive triggers, haptic feedback, touch-sensitive buttons, and reportedly the ability to sense the distance between your fingers and the device. So yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot now to be adding on. I hope it'll be able to play all the old games as well as the new ones it's adding on and things like that. But it sounds like it probably will. In fairness, they have been doing that. The PS5, you can use PlayStation Now and play the PS4 games and all that. So that's pretty good. Final Fantasy VII. VII. I was like, every time I see Roman numerals, I'm like, what's that again? Remake for PS4 and PS5 is half off through August 19. Starting at $30 for the base game. So if you want... Oh yeah, it's just there's a sale on Final Fantasy. I thought it was a new game coming out as well. Square Enix has slashed the price. Yeah, so okay. Let's see what else we have. Sony's $499. PS5 is no longer selling at a loss. Yeah, the PS5... it's the same with a lot of these controllers. PS4 as well. And PS3 were selling at a loss. PS3 especially, they were selling at a big loss at one stage, but they're no longer selling at a loss now, apparently. Bloomberg reported that Sony chief financial officer Hikori Totoki shared the news just a week after the company announced it had sold 10 million PS5s. While the PS5 with a disc drive is no longer selling for less than the cost to produce it, it is the less expensive and discless 399 Digital Edition is reportedly on track to have Sony's related losses offset by other hardware sales like accessories and the PS4. Sony sold 500,000 PS4 consoles in the most recent quarter, bringing lifetime sales up to an impressive 116.4 million. So they're still selling PS4s, I suppose their sales and things like that, but they're still making profit out of them, but they're not making profit out of the discless version of the PS5, but they are making the marginal profits out of the PS4. But they make tons of money on the games and all that. That's what it's all about. And the accessories. Controllers are very expensive now. They're over €70. I remember one time they were 50 quid or 40 something quid. But I suppose there's a lot more technology in them nowadays. Those adaptive triggers and haptic feedback and all that. So they're more expensive to produce. It took Sony years to stop losing money on PS3 sales. But the company stopped selling the PS4. At a loss around 6 months after its debut in 2013. The PS5 has taken over ever so slightly longer, but it's clearly not repeating the costly exercise of the PS3, despite early reports suggesting Sony was struggling with PS5 pricing due to expensive parts. With all those chips and everything. So, yeah, they're doing well, in other words. And last few stories now. The PS5 worked fine with the slowest compatible SSD. Oh, so this is another PS5 story. So we were told when the PS5 came out first, it's going to have expandable memory, but it's not available yet because there was none being made and they hadn't activated it in the console. But there was a slot there where you can plug in a certain type of SSD, the MVE one. I think it is, but it didn't. There was none available that would meet the speed requirements at the time. So, but there is some out now, and I think are they activating it in your PS5? If your PS5 is already running out of speedy solid state storage, there's a fix on the way. Sony's new beta update for the PS5 allows you to expand your paltry 667 GB of usable space by popping in the same sort of M2 SSD stick you might slip into your laptop or desktop PC. this on The Verge, their colleague Mitchell has a PS5 buying guide right here that meets all Sony's recommendations. An SSD buying guide so is available on The Verge. It meets all such speeds. At least it has to be at least 5,500 MB/s. That might leave you wondering, though, what about slower SSDs? That's why we tracked down an EDATA XPG Gamma 5 S50 Lite, one of the slowest compatible PSI Generation 4s we could find at just 3,900 MB/s reads and 3,200 MB/s writes. And it stuck it into the PS5 along with another drive. We compared the 550 against both the PS5's internal SSD and 5,000 MB/s Sabrent Rocket 500GB in a battery of tests, including load times for games, early PS5 showcases, Ratchet and Clank and Spider-Man. We also managed to see how long it takes to back up games to each kind of drive. So it seems to have worked, that slower drive, even though it didn't meet the criteria, it seemed to have worked it. But let's see the verdict. Seemingly, even the slowest compatible SSD we could find had near identical load times to the one Sony includes in the box. Sometimes it's a second slower, sometimes it's a second or two faster, but basically it's a total wash. Hopping through dimensions in Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, I saw no appreciable difference with the slowest SSD in gameplay either. Stepping through pocket dimensions was instantaneous, and when there was a light pause during a boss fight, I saw the same pause on the internal SSD as well. So I also didn't necessarily see a huge difference between the drives when it comes to transferring games back and forth, but there was one big surprise, at least in this beta. It appears that Sony may be throttling the write speed of the PS5's own internal drive. It took 2.2 seconds to send both PS5 and PS4 copies of Final Fantasy Remake into the Sabrent SSD, for instance, but took 12.47 to go back to the PS5 over five times longer. On average, I saw write speeds of around 1,000 MB/s or 1,100 MB/s transferring my five test games to either of my add-in M2 drives, but around 220 MB/s sending those games back to the PS5. Both of those are far better than 141 MB/s average transfer speeds I saw sending games to the Seagate HDD and the 97 MB I saw beaming them back. It took over half an hour to transfer the Final Fantasy games 176 GB back to the internal SSD. But the slower internal SSD write speeds are weird, and Sony didn't have a comment when I asked. So they might be throttling their own SSD drive for putting stuff into them. For now, the biggest question is, will game developers fully optimize their games for the incredible speeds an SSD can offer? Yeah, so that's it. What was the cheapest one there again? We compared the internal Sabrent Rocket. That's not the cheapest one. Let me see. The EDATA XPG Gamex S50 Lite. So that was one of the cheapest ones, but there might be other ones that are cheaper, but it seemed to work okay, so that's pretty good. And for our last story today, Oppo announces next generation under display selfie camera. So these have been used in kind of demo phones, and they've made videos. Lots of phone companies have made videos about them, the kind of hidden camera underneath. There's been ones that that you can kind of see obviously underneath the screen and things like that. But this one, they say you should notice almost no visual difference. So the camera is hidden underneath the screen and it can take pictures through the screen. Oppo has announced the latest iteration of its underscreen camera technology, claiming it allows for a selfie camera. Or is there a camera for sale with an underscreen? Maybe there was one, but there was a lot of demos and stuff. But this one is going to be one anyway. Without compromising the integrity of the screen, unlike earlier approaches that reduce pixel density in the portion of the screen that covers the camera in order to let more light pass through. Oppo is using smaller pixels to maintain the same 400 ppi sharpness as the rest of the screen. The resulting The results, according to Oppo, is that users should notice almost no visual difference between the underscreen camera area and the rest of the screen during everyday use, creating a more immersive visual experience. Yeah, that is pretty cool now. I like that you can take a selfie and you don't even see a camera. You know, it's hidden underneath the screen. So that's pretty cool. And also, it's a lot cleaner look. You know, my wife has a Xiaomi Mi 9T Pro and it has no camera on the front. Built into the screen, we'll say it has a pop-up camera, and it's very clean. It's a lot. It's lovely for watching videos and things like that. There's no bump or hole in the screen or anything like that. So, and that's all of our tech stories for today. I hope you've enjoyed Tech Thursday. I know I've enjoyed it, and we've gone through some of the latest stories in tech. As always, you can call 069-66200, or you can text or WhatsApp as 0871-669-800 for any tech-related questions for the next show. But as always, the best way to get me is reception102@gmail.com. Mark it down for Tech Thursday or Patrick Sheehan, and I'll get back to you. Hope you've enjoyed catching up with me, and best of luck to, I think it was Michael that was looking to upgrade his phone camera, and best of luck in your own searching. I hope I've led you in the right direction for what kind of phone you're looking for. But thanks for listening. See you again next week. Peace.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on Westlimerick 102 FM.